From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're meeting the two people who want to be the next mayor of Southport. It's a waterfront city at the confluence of the Cape Fear River and the Atlantic Ocean in Brunswick County. Southport has landed on notable lists over the years, including recognition from Coastal Living as the happiest seaside town. It's famous as the location for the film Safe Haven, and it's the home of North Carolina's official 4th of July festival. The city of Southport has grown by about 25% from 2010 to 2018, but it's still considered a quaint waterfront town. The two people vying to be the next mayor are facing off for the third time. In 2015, Jerry Dove beat Joe Pat Hatem by about 7%. 2 years later, Joe Pat Hatem challenged Mayor Dove again. This time, he came closer to victory, losing by just 1%, or 13 votes. Now, in 2019, the same two are in the race. We'll meet the incumbent first today. Jerry Dove is going after his third term as mayor of the city of Southport. Before serving as mayor, he spent 12 years as chief of police in the city. Before that, he served in the police department as an officer, shift supervisor, and canine handler. He worked as a master trooper with the North Carolina State Highway Patrol for 26 years. He served in the U.S. Army Reserve and the United States Air Force. In 2007, Jerry Dove was awarded the Order of the Longleaf Pine. Mayor Jerry Dove, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you for having me.
What are you most proud of from the last 2 years?
Well, I'm proud of all the accomplishments that the board has made along with myself. We have started some projects that we talked about the last time I was here, mainly the restoration of our waterfront, preventing the erosion. We've got a plan going now, a design, and that project will be let for bids in this coming year, 2020. So we're pretty proud of that. And also some of the damages that were done by our two most recent hurricanes.
Are you talking about Florence and Dorian?
Yes, ma'am. Yes. We are now getting most of our infrastructure repaired for that. And we're making progress on that. A lot of people don't realize it, but some of our infrastructure has been there since about 1903, and it was antiquated, and during the storms, it just breached the integrity of those.
Which infrastructure are you talking about?
Well, mainly is our water runoff, our stormwater drains. Those are the ones that the integrity was breached out. Now, we have replaced those and are repairing that, and also some of our roadways were damaged because of that. The roads collapsed underneath all the pressure of the water. So what's happening is we've rebuilt that, and it's much better than it was. So this last hurricane, Dorian, that we had, we could see the benefits of our repairs that we have made. So we're pretty proud of that. We're also excited about getting our small boat harbor. It was damaged during Hurricane Matthew. So you can see the length of time here. We finally got a design process for that, and our permits are in. And so hopefully construction on that will be available here soon. So those are three projects that I'm pretty proud of that we've got going. In the past, there's been so many good projects that the boards in the past have had visions of completing. But what happens is that sometimes people don't return to the board, or new people come on the board, and some of those good plans get kind of put by the wayside, and new plans are found and scrap the old ones, so to speak. So I'm pretty proud of what this board has done.
Last time we spoke, you talked about working with the Department of Transportation on
Yes.
improving some of the roads in Southport. And we know just Yeah. even over the last few years, Southport has seen exponential growth.
Yes.
And there is there's an increase in tourism in Southport, which is certainly good for the economy. But the transportation system, is it creating safety issues now?
We're improving that. I'm so fortunate that for the last 4 years, I've been a member of the Rural Transportation Authority Committee. We meet about every quarter. And we've been fortunate to get some projects going, and they've been the DOT has especially helped us out on several of those projects. I'm going to give you one recent here that we're lowering the speed limit coming into Southport to protect our citizens, our pedestrians, and also they've made some improvements in the roadways itself. We're trying to get more sidewalks. I was a little disappointed in a program that we had. We were going to build some sidewalks on Howe Street, but that's been postponed a little bit, as so has some of the highway construction coming into Southport. And that's mainly,
DOT has struggled with cash flow. And has
well,
put
it,
some...
it has. It has. And one of the reasons we've got to realize is because of the storm damage, and that's taken a lot of funding to help the cities and the counties get back in good shape here. So, but I think we've made some progress on that. They made some improvements to our ferry system out there. So I'm pretty proud of that.
We know that, and this is according to the CAMA land use plan from 2014, that most of Southport's tourism is actually, they're day trippers, day tourists. So Southport, even though it's on the waterfront, it's more like an inland municipality, really, than some of the beach towns in Brunswick County. And parking has been an issue there. We've heard from another candidate for the Board of Aldermen that the Yacht Basin, he described it as kind of a mess and said that parking needs to be more clearly defined. What are the plans for parking?
Well, we've had several plans over there, but you've got to realize that Southport, a very small town, and the influx of people coming, not only tourists, but the increase in our population has created some problems. We're doing the best we can on that. I know that our public works folks are working pretty hard on trying to find some parking spaces, some off-street parking, and putting up some signage to guide people to where they can park. You got to also remember that, too, most everything you can see in Southport is within walking distance. So if you can find a parking place in close by the waterfront, you're going about to see everything in Southport. But I know it has been a tremendous problem, and I tell you what I have seen, too, though, is I've seen an increase in our golf cart. I was talking to our chief of police, Todd Coring, just the other day, as a matter of fact, and when I was the chief, we had about 30 golf carts registered in the city of Southport. Now he's pushing, I think, almost 400. So you can see the increase in that. A lot of people are going to the smaller vehicles and golf carts and these smaller electric vehicles. So it doesn't take much space to park those. So I think you'll see more and more, not only in Southport, but I think you're going to see that more and more in all the cities, especially the smaller towns. And just simply because of the space, the price of gas and the convenience of the electricity, and I think you'll see more and more of that, and it'll save people a little money. And
it was 2 years ago when you last ran, ma'am. We talked about the police department, and you referred to it as an excellent police department, which you led for 12 years.
Yes, ma'am.
An audit of the Southport Police Department found, and this is according to WECT, lack of leadership within the department, inadequate command and control of critical high-risk activities, inadequate hiring and background screening practices, inconsistent application of critical policies. And this report comes, of course, after two of the top people in the department, Police Chief Gary Smith and Lieutenant Mike Simmons, were charged with multiple crimes, including obtaining property by false pretenses, willful failure to discharge duties, and obstruction of justice. They were fired last year. They're now awaiting trial. What does that audit tell you about the department and the problems that led to those two men's ability to commit those crimes?
allegedly.
Let me just say this. When I heard about that, that broke my heart. You know, I was in command actually for 14 years. I was the interim chief there for a couple of years. But anyway, and those two men, I worked with the one, the chief, his name was Gary Smith, for 20 years. I knew him and I know his family. He was a good man while he was under my command. Why the department went downhill. You know, it's something that you place your trust into somebody. It's kind of like we trust our spouses, and then we're shocked when we hear that they betrayed us. And that's the same way I felt right then.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we got Chief Coring in there to take the job. He comes from a long line of law enforcement officers. His father was the former chief there. Even his grandfather was. His grandfather was actually the sheriff of our county, too. So, and I remember him when I first came here. I think he was about 11 or 12 years old. And I watched him grow up. I'm so proud of his life accomplishments. He has done some things. He's continued some programs that I had, our We Care for our elderly citizens. He's started the bicycle patrol up. We're seeing more and more of the officers downtown, which I always try to do that. The not only the We Care program, but he has a program each year for the needy children at Christmas time. Call shop with Southport Cops, and there's a record number of needy kids that are helped each year by that program, and he's really took the bull by the horn, so to speak, and got the department back in shape, and I'm so proud of that.
And this is actually what we've heard from a number of people around Southport. This affirmation that that the chief Coring is doing a very good job restoring integrity to the police department, and it's clear that this is very hard for you to talk about because this was a big part of your contribution to the city during your time there. But when you think about this audit that came out, how far back did the audit firm go when they were doing
their investigation? They just went back to the last command, not my command. You know, I ran a pretty tight ship there. You know, I was trained by the state and had been to many, many schools. I knew, and those fellas knew what the regulations were. They knew that, as a matter of fact, we had the same policies in effect when I was the chief that should have been followed here.
And other people have said that also, that sometimes in any company, in any nonprofit, in any municipality, you can find bad apples. And if people are going to lie, cheat, and steal, they're going to do it wherever they go. But is there anything, so not, you know, this isn't about pointing fingers, but are there any lessons to be learned after seeing the audit and seeing what the investigators found? Is there anything that leaders in the city of Southport could take from this and say, oh, this is something we need to be aware of going forward?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we have two liaison officers to the police department, our mayor pro tem, Rick Pecanis, and Alderman Laura Sharkey. They're our liaisons, and they kind of bridge the gap between the board and with the police department. And myself, I'm still a member of the emergency management committee, so I get to sit with them to see what needs are there, see if there's any problems that we can help with. Now, you have to remember, too, the board and the mayor do not do any hiring and firing of that. That's the chief of police and the city manager's recommendation. So,
right.
And I believe he's the Chief Coring and the city manager, Bruce Oakley, have put together an excellent department now.
What did the audit for the police department cost?
I would have to. I don't know that right off the top of my head.
Fair enough. There has been a good deal of talk in Southport about issues that have been decided with opponents of the way the Board of Aldermen has gone, saying there's been a lack of public input on major issues. And some of those issues the public has spoken up about: the sale of the old water treatment plant site, amending the Unified Development Ordinance retroactively to allow one company to build a 50-foot structure. Just taking this issue of public input, is there anything, given the outcry, I think that's a fair characterization of what's gone on, is there anything the board and the mayor should consider about increasing public input or getting more information out there?
Well, we've had several public meetings about that's where when everybody talks about transparency. We've had several meetings about all these issues here. An example of one is the sale of the wastewater treatment plant. Now, you know, we have been out of the wastewater treatment plant business for about 12 years. That property is set down there, and nothing has been done with it. And sure, we looked at it a couple of times, and there was one offer, but they withdrew it because of the cleanup price of the place. So when we got this offer from the marina, which wants to buy it, they made a fair price, and we thought it would be fair. Well, I've talked to even a lot of real estate agents. They said that's about what it's worth down there, especially with the cleanup.
But what factor should the members of the public play in this dialogue?
Well,
you thought it was a good idea, and most of the Board of Aldermen did.
Yeah,
not all.
Well, you know, it was put out. We had public meetings, and of course, they voiced their opinion. You know that we needed more space for parks and recreation. But one of the factors I think that the board looked at, and I did too, we have 7 parks already in Southport for a town of a little over 3,000 people. And so the other thing too is
so that you're saying you don't think there needs to be more public input. You feel like there's enough.
Well, yeah, you know, there was enough public input, I thought. You know, people talked to me about it several times, and you know, I said, "Well, we've got a plan," and the marina has offered to put a easement for the city and also build a little what I'm going to call a water park down there for people to come and enjoy the environment down there, look at nature and stuff. But yet, they're going to clean it up too. So, and that needs to be done because it's nothing but a wastewater dump down there now.
Your opponent is talking about raising the time limit for speakers at public meetings from 3 minutes to 5 minutes. What do you think about that idea?
I think probably we could do that. It just depends on how much we have on the agenda to take care of. And what I would like to do is this, is that if we have a group of people that are going to talk about the same thing, we have a lot of that, you know, they maybe they'll get on and say if they want to come and talk about the trash pickup or something, and there's about 15 or 20 people on there. Instead of giving them all 3 minutes, why don't we just say, all right, we'll pick you out of 2 or 3 people, and we're going to give you 5 minutes or so if you're all going to speak on the same subject. And I think that would work out pretty good there and give them a little longer time.
So you're saying get representatives
well,
to
that
speak
would be
on
good.
An
yeah,
issue?
Because if you have people that's coming up there and you got 15 or 20 people wanting to talk about the same thing, and you give them each 3, that's over an hour, you see. So,
right. Other candidates, and I'm thinking now of someone who's running for the Board of Aldermen, have suggested having additional public meetings so that people can get full information, because some of the criticism has been there just isn't good information put out to the public on which to make these decisions. That's why people are talking about transparency and the need for increasing it. Do you think that the city could do a better job of putting out information about some of these issues and including the public in the dialogue before it gets to a vote?
Well, I'm sure there can be something worked out with that. And we've updated our website, too, to put information to the public so they can use it to be a little bit more informed about these meetings, because I've noticed that some meetings we have where it is publicized, nobody comes. I'll give you an example, is that we had one meeting where we were going to spend, we had a grant to obtain $23 million to improve our sewage system. Nobody seemed to come to that. Nobody cared. But there's things like that are not so important, and everybody comes there. You know, it's kind of makes me wonder where their values are sometimes. But anyway, needless to say, I think that by putting out a little bit more information on our city website and the newspaper probably could alleviate some of those concerns that the public has.
Sewer
rates. And then the other thing, too, is that I have Mayor's Day every month, you know. I've even changed it because somebody, well, where we were having it, they needed it for a training room, but we are now moved to the old visitor center, and everybody could come to that and voice their opinion and stay there as long as you want to. I usually stay there for an hour or two. So.
Sewer rates have gone up, and at an August board meeting, a couple of residents raised concerns about the rates being out of sync with the size of their property and a hardship for seniors. Should the city be taking this 35% increase into account, especially when it comes to seniors on fixed incomes who are in smaller properties using less water?
Yeah, we're working on that right now. The rate committee is working on that. Our city manager is working on that. And I've also met with a few of the board members, and we're going to do something where we can aid those folks who have less means than some of our citizens down there. Now you have to realize this: we buy our water from the county. So some of our rates are dependent upon that now, you see. And the other thing, too, is the state kind of looks badly at if you're operating in the red instead of the black. And that's one of the reasons we had to look at our rates. But now what we're doing here is that if you're a person, say, on fixed income, and I know quite a few of them, I've been talking to them while I've been out in the neighborhoods, and we're going to have this, what we call an assistance to the those who may need some help with their bills. There also is the county can help. They have an assistance program. And the other thing, too, I wanted the rate committee to look at, too, is that minimum that some people, like if you're there by yourself, a widow or a widower, and sometimes even just me and my wife, we don't go over the limit, the minimum, see. And maybe there could be an adjustment there. So we're looking in all that. And plus, I met with the representative from our the Council of Government here in Wilmington. And they have some assistance, too, to help us with seniors that are having difficulties paying their bills.
Going back to the text amendment of the UDO, Alderman Karen Mosteller said the following. She said, in part, we would not be here considering this text amendment if the city was not trying to sell land to the Preston Group in order to execute a one-time sale of a city property. We're now considering an exemption, and now I'm paraphrasing, from the business district height restriction for dry storage buildings. The only thing the text amendment has in common with a conditional use permit, she said, is that it's for the benefit of one individual. People are concerned that this text amendment now sets a precedent, so other commercial interests will be able to build at this greater height.
Yeah, I was concerned about that myself. But the way it, no, that's not going to be true. That height restriction is only limited to a boat storage. And there's only, and you have to have, I believe it's at least 40 wet slips. Now, there's only two entities in Southport that have that. One of them is the marina, and the other one is Deepwater Point, where Baldhead manages its crafts and its boats down there. So those would be the only two places be built.
What would you say to people who are concerned about the process and that in this case there was this text amendment that sort of ignored recommendations from the planning board?
Well, you've got to remember, too, that the planning board is just there to advise us. The board makes the final decision. That is in that's given to us by law, 20-158, I believe, subsection 7. It says that the board has the authority to make appropriations for the betterment of the community or for the city that they represent. That's just paraphrasing it, but that's about what it is. Now, most of that UDO, from studying it there with our planning director and the city manager, was antiquated and has been removed from most of the cities. And another thing, too, we're going over that UDO to rewrite it and make it a little bit clearer, because right now commercial properties can be built just about on any place in Southport.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interview. Southport Mayor Jerry Dove, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
When we come back from this break, we'll meet Dr. Joe Pat Hatem, the man challenging the incumbent for the third consecutive time. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The city of Southport sits at the convergence of the Atlantic Ocean and the Cape Fear River. The U.S. Census Bureau puts the population at about 3,800 people. Two people are hoping to be its next mayor, the same two who faced off in 2015 and again in 2017. Challenger Joe Pat Hatem is a native of Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, and a medical doctor who practices at Southport's Dozier Memorial Hospital. It was 30-something years ago, he says, that he started moonlighting in Dozier's emergency room while doing his residency at New Hanover Regional Medical Center. Joe Pat Hatem, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. Great to be here.
You've run now. This is your third time running against Mayor Jerry Dove. Why is it so important to you to be mayor? Is it about beating Mayor Dove?
No, I don't think it really has anything to do in particular about beating Mayor Dove. I'm running for the people of Southport. After I lost in 2017, people came to my home in January of 2018. I mean, just the election had barely over, and they said, "We want you to run again in 2 years." People intermittently in 2018, "We want you to run." I would say, "Well, I have my signs. I saved them. I didn't throw them away." Or they say, "You're going to run again?" I say, "Sure. It's a hobby by now. I've already run twice." And so after this past year, when city government had created such distress within the city, and in particular with the citizens, more and more people came up to me to ask me to run.
What do you mean that city government created distress with the citizens?
It started at the workshop in January. The city had decided to sell a piece of property, the old sewer plant, and not much information had been given to the citizens. They did not understand the process, and they wanted to have public comment at the workshop. And citizens are raising their voices at aldermen, and aldermen are raising their voices at citizens. It was an embarrassing spectacle.
How could you? I know one of the proposals that you've made on your website is raising the minimum time limit for citizens to speak at public meetings to encourage more public input. And of course, it 5 minutes instead of three, is that what you're talking about now?
Yes.
So on the face of it, that sounds great, but you get a few citizens in the room who all get to speak for 5 minutes, and you could be sitting there for 2.5 hours easily just listening to people repeat the same things. Is that manageable for a public meeting? I should say a regularly scheduled Board of Aldermen meeting.
Absolutely. I think the importance of letting the people speak, I mean, it is crucial. Our meetings are too short. That's the other thing. An alderman meeting can be done in 40 minutes. I don't know how you do the business of the city in 40 minutes. And in my work, I want to give everyone the information that I have, and I want them to understand. I want to educate, and I want to hear everything about them. And it takes time. The difference is, in a meeting, I don't have to make a decision right away. In the ER, I've got to make a decision. I may have 30 seconds. Here, the luxury of listening to the voices of the people and taking the time to educate and getting it right, and then you don't have the discourse. I will sit there all evening, be happy to.
Now, so I'm going to push back on that a little bit, because I think that's easy to say, and it's easy probably to even feel that way before you get into it. And I'm playing devil's advocate here, because people have raised all kinds of ideas about increasing citizen input. But when you're dealing with a situation where you feel like your experts, your consultants have done, say, an economic analysis on an issue and determined that it's best, and I'm going to ask you about the wastewater treatment
Absolutely.
Plant later, but, you know, best, say, to phase out of an agreement with Brunswick County because this is the in-depth analysis that's been done, and you have to listen to people talk from their emotions and not talk about, offer facts, really, to illuminate the analysis of the facts. I mean, you're a doctor, so you're constantly looking at facts and analyzing facts. Can you see where it gets difficult for public officials to listen to the same emotional argument person after person?
Well, let me give you one fact concerning the sewer plant. They chose to put it in the backyard of a community off of Bethel Church Road. I don't think anyone wants a sewer plant in their backyard. And this created a wellspring of pushback from that community, and they have a right to do that. And so in terms of getting the facts, yeah, they had the facts that they chose to put it there, and look what happened. And so...
So you're saying the emotional reaction is
warranted. It was based on fact. That was why they were there. Had they not chosen that particular spot, those people wouldn't be there and they wouldn't be emotional, but it was based on fact. And I understand what you're saying, but I will listen, and it will, the power of attrition in terms of once everyone has kind of said the same thing, the other people scheduled to speak will probably come up and say, well, I echo what was just said, or I agree with what has previously been said, or I'd like to add one more thing, but I don't have much to offer after that. So I think it will take care of itself.
A lot of candidates across municipalities have raised the issue of citizen engagement and transparency, or lack of transparency, as issues in their municipalities. So it's easy to talk about public engagement and getting citizen input and facilitating greater transparency. But other than raising the time limit for people to talk at some of these meetings, what are other ideas you have around transparency and public input?
I favor town hall meetings in addition to our alderman meeting. For example, if I'm elected mayor, you brought up the issue of the sewer. First town hall meeting would be having the county come in and tell us what it is that you have to offer and why is it better to go with the county than build our own sewer plant. I mean, it's the right thing to do. And if you empower the people with information, they are more inclined to be involved, and they will be satisfied with the decision that's made.
Southport is, of course, phasing out of its agreement with Brunswick County and has decided to move forward, as you've said, to build its own water treatment plant. Do you think it's the right move? Public input aside, is it the right move for Southport to have its own plant?
My decision was not based on public input. It was based on what my training, my education, my experience, and that type of thing. And I firmly believe in medicine, we have a regionalization of services. You cannot get a heart cath at Dozier Hospital, and you shouldn't. And so I felt like this is such a big project. We are such a small town. Why would we not sort of band together with other municipalities and go with the county? And that means having a rapport with the county commissioners. And that means sitting at the table and talking with them and making sure that the public knows everything that I know in terms of that decision-making process. It's the process more than anything else.
And that's one of the arguments that we've heard against an independent plant for Southport is economies of scale, and it makes so much more sense to have a centrally run system rather than all the municipalities having their own systems. But there was an analysis that was done that determined equally, it would be equal whether Southport built its own from a dollars and cents point of view versus whether it stayed with the county. The difference is if Southport builds its own, it owns it then. And so over time, it seemed to be a better deal. Do you think that's not true?
First of all, that information was not made in detail and available to the citizens. Secondly, I don't know of any project that comes in at budget or under budget. So they said, well, it costs $26 billion. Well, Oak Island, you know, they had their issue. They thought it would be so many million, and it was many millions more over that. So that's my concern. And the maintenance, what if it floods? I mean, we are in a hurricane belt, obviously. So these are things that concern me. And why I favored going with the county.
How do you think the city of Southport should prioritize the power infrastructure issues? I mean, there are a few that we know of, including the major one, which is there's one feeder line into the city of Southport. And so if that goes out, Southport's out of luck. What's your proposal?
I think, first of all, we need to... And they've been trying to do this. We need to get those power lines buried. I think that would be a major accomplishment and improvement in terms of keeping our power grid open and that type thing. We need to have a close relationship with Duke Power, Brunswick Electric. I mean, the city is responsible for, you know, water, sewer, power. Those are the big three. And I favor sitting down with them before a problem starts. For example, they said, how would you handle a disaster or a hurricane? You know, at the forum, I said, well, in January, I would go ahead and have a mock drill. So I would know. If I win, I would know. And who are the people that need to be in the room? Hurricane is coming. What are the resources that we need to have available? Who do we call? Who is in place? Who at the state level, who we access? And the same with power, and the same with any other, you know, major utility issue.
When you look at what happened with Southport after Florence in 2018 and then Dorian this year, what are some of the lessons that you would want to take if you were elected mayor moving forward for the city?
You have to be pre-positioned. I learned that. I'll give you one example. We were at the hospital and pretty much stranded there for 8 days. I mean, no one could get
in. Are you talking about Florence?
Yes, after Florence. Yeah. And one of the things we did not have, our air conditioning runs on water. You have to have water in the system. Well, Southport lost water. So we learned that for the next hurricane, you have to pre-position tanks of water on site. So that's just one small part of the process. So I think preparation is the key in that regard.
Is that unusual that Southport city officials didn't know that before 2018?
Obviously, someone knew it because we got the, I don't know if it was in Southport, but one of the hospitals in Brunswick County had the tanks, and that's where we got that water from. So I can't criticize on that. I certainly didn't know it. So, I mean, I can't criticize. Probably should have known, but I certainly can't criticize that.
based on what you know about the police department now, we know the former chief and lieutenant are facing criminal charges, and they were fired from the Southport Police Department last year. It made national news. It was such a debacle. There had to be other entities helping to take over law enforcement in Southport until some of this got sorted out. The word is generally pretty good about the current police chief. They say people are saying Todd Coring is doing a good job reinstituting principles and bringing integrity back to the police department. But what did you learn from the audit that was done last year after the investigation into what went wrong with the police department?
What I learned from the police department issue, as you call it, the debacle, is that mentoring is crucial to leadership. And in particular, if you're mayor, if you're not mentoring all of your department managers. For example, for me, if I'm elected, my job, one of the many jobs, I will make sure that I'm mentoring our EMS chief. I'll also stay in close contact with Todd Coring and Charles Drew, fire chief. And I think it was just a leadership failure. Here is a young man who was placed in a position as chief of police, and our mayor is a former chief of police of that same town. How could that happen? That was my take.
So are you saying that the fault really is with the current mayor on this one? Can you have changed the trajectory of someone who is willing, as another candidate put it, to lie, cheat, and steal?
No, I'm not putting the blame on anyone. No. You can't. If someone's going to break the law, they're going to break the law. But if you're mentoring someone, if you're trying to develop their character, if you're trying to inspire them, if you're on top of them, making sure they're doing their job, then they probably may not have time to get in trouble.
If you win the mayoral seat in Southport, if you get one issue that you get to just have it work out the way you want to see it worked out, what is that one issue? What is the major thing, if you had a free pass, you'd want to see accomplished?
I think the one issue is how, in this change is going to come to Southport, the economy, the development, and that type of thing. How do we keep that quaint village atmosphere, architecture, spirit, while promoting the right type of small business, economic development, and tourism?
What are your ideas around that? Because that is the crux of that's probably the biggest issue facing Southport, according to most of the candidates, is this explosive growth that's happening in Brunswick County. And a lot of the growth is happening on the outside of Southport proper. But what are some ideas for managing that growth?
Well, fortunately, we have a UDO, Unified Development Ordinance, and that helps to spell out certain specifications for builders, developers, and that type of thing. For example, the Wendy's couldn't be in downtown Southport because you can't have a drive-through, for example, or you can't have that type of signage. So, and by the way, it's booming. If you drive by there, there's a long line of cars. So that's good for Southport, and it's out that way. So that's part of it, the CAMA land use plan. The importance of our entry corridor, how it's landscaped, keeping it architecturally in tune with the quaint village. We have got to improve the roads down by the I-Basin, get City Dock repaired. These are things. And the courthouse, it's been sitting there, 4 years now since I started running. We have to support entities that are going to help bring that building back to life.
There are rumors, that the fire department is installing a sign that will say Southport Fire Department Headquarters. Do you know anything about this proposal and how much it might cost taxpayers? And if so, is it a good idea?
Well, it's right across from the hospital, so it's not a rumor. I've seen them building it. I mean, there's a sign there already. And so I've been to a number of the meetings, in fact, most all of them this past year. I don't recall. It may have been on the consent agenda, but I don't recall it even being on the agenda. So in terms of what it cost and the purpose and things like that, I don't recall having the exact details of that, but I know it's being built right now.
So, as you've said, after a lot of back and forth over this site where the old wastewater treatment plant was, the Southport Board of Aldermen voted to amend the city's unified development ordinance and allow a 5-story unit to be built, dry storage. Some people argue this now has set a precedent for other commercial interests to build structures of a higher elevation there, and this will forever change the waterfront in downtown Southport. Supporters of this text amendment say, actually, there are only 2 facilities there that are able to build this kind of unit, and that's what the amendment allows for. Those 2 spots are taken, so nothing else can change. What would you have done if you were mayor and you could have helped shepherd this through to completion? How would you have approached that? Would you have voted for that text amendment?
You're talking about it to raise the height level.
Yes.
Okay. Well, since the mayor doesn't vote unless there's a tie, so there's already a structure there that is 50 feet. And the city sold the property. The planning board did look at it, and it did go through. But it's just for that one specific area. It's not for anywhere else in downtown Southport. And I think it goes to what I've talked about earlier, the process, the education of the public.
So you're saying then just that text amendment will not set a precedent for other interests to do the same thing? That's not a concern for you?
No, it should not. No, it should not.
So then how would you have handled the process? You're saying that people didn't really understand well enough what was happening in that deal?
Yeah, well, that goes back to the original sale of the property. It was done quickly. There was not a lot of notification. There wasn't public comment. Even though the property's been there a long time, and selling the property, to me, was not the issue. It's the way in which it was done. Did they receive maximal dollar benefit from the sale? So these are the issues.
Do you think they did?
Well, when they used a comparable piece of land to appraise it, which was not a waterfront property but a property on Howe Street. This does have, you know, beautiful marsh, tidal, wetland, and that type of thing. They probably could have gotten more money for it.
In a 2007 citizen survey, which I have to say may be obsolete because that's 12 years old, it appears the most important issue to residents is preserving the historic character of Southport, which we've talked about. But 72% said Southport should work to promote affordable, owner-occupied housing. Do you agree with that, first of all, that Southport should be facilitating affordable housing?
You know, Southport is a retirement community. And if you look at the real estate just on Bay Street, those homes are now priced at $1.3 million. So to say that there's affordable housing in the village of Southport, these are very expensive homes.
Yeah, well, there isn't. which is what this was about. Like, should Southport be working to promote workforce housing?
I think there are ways to do it, but I don't know if you could. You just can't do it with. I don't think you can do it within the village. You know, there's Abington Court off of 211, and there are other developments right outside the city limits that could be used for that.
And that's this edition of the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Dr. Joe Pat Hatem, thanks for sharing your views.
Thank you.
Thanks also to Southport Mayor Jerry Dove. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Coastline producer is Caitlin Freund. News producer is Rachel Keith. Coastline is a production of WHQR Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org, get the podcast, or find it on the HQR app. Early voting is underway. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.